Hello, listeners. Welcome to Talk Eastern Europe, a podcast dedicated to Central and Eastern Europe and the official podcast of the New Eastern Europe magazine. My name is Agnieszka Widłaszewska. This is episode 119. And I am joined today for this episode by one of our other co-hosts, Maciek Makulski. Hello, Maciek.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to this episode. It's Thursday, November 10th, when we record this introduction. And the main news in the last hours, if I may say that, is that the Russian Ministry of Defense ordered Russian troops to withdraw from the west bank of the Dnipro River to the east, on the left bank. And this news came on November 9th, and it means a major success of Ukraine's counter-offensive, at least in this direction. And it also means the liberation of the city of Kherson, which I think is a huge thing. But from what I have read so far, it is neither a trap of Russian forces to involve Ukrainian soldiers in heavy fights in the area outside the city or nearby, nor it is the end of the Battle of Kherson as such and the region around the city. But Russia's withdrawal from the West Bank is a fact right now, and it, in my opinion, it is a significant progress for the Ukrainian side. Not sure, Aga, if you follow this development as well, and if you would like to add something here.
Yes, I'm going to add something, but before I add something, I have two disclaimers today. First disclaimer is, as you might hear, my voice is not ideal. That is because I am slightly sick. It's not COVID, don't worry, but I do apologize in case I sound a bit rough at times. And my second disclaimer is the traditional one. Before I give you any of my opinions on this, just remember that my opinions do not represent the opinions and interests of the institution that I work for. And now that I've said it, I can share with you some of these opinions. So yeah, I have been obviously following these news as well, Maciek. I think indeed I agree with you. It is a very important development. I would still be a bit hesitant about what will happen in the days to come. And I think the Ukrainians are also quite cautious. So it's not necessarily, the reaction is not, oh, yay, the Russians are retreating, let's run to Kherson and all be happy. I think they are definitely taking into account that there might be some additional things happening, or there might be things that the Russians will leave in Kherson, for example, that only will be found later on. So when the Ukrainian army will be entering the city, hopefully soon, I'm guessing they will be very, very careful and they will be checking everything very carefully as well.
Yeah, the experience from other cities and regions suggests that Kherson might be heavily mined, and there might be other, you know, difficulties facing Ukrainian soldiers coming there.
Exactly. And what I think is quite interesting, this morning I was watching some of the Russian state TV, as I do recently, because I think it's interesting to hear what is the narrative that is being sold to the Russian population on such things. And of course, here it's particularly interesting because on the strategic side, it is a failure, right? I mean, they are withdrawing from the only regional capital that they captured. They are withdrawing pretty much without any fighting, and they need to spin it to make it look like it's still okay. So I was watching part of yesterday's evening program with Vladimir Solovyov, and there the line they took was essentially, this is a military decision that was taken. So they very clearly, as you pointed out, Maciek, when we were discussing right before recording, they separate the political and the military, just so that it's clear this is a military decision, and it was taken based on military analysis, and this is how it has to be. So in a way, we are separating this from Putin and from anything that the government might have decided. But they are not, at least Solovyov was not, let's say, openly criticizing it. He was more trying to sell it as, we need to deal with this. This is happening. And they were also definitely going in the direction of, this is done in order to protect our troops, in order not to put them in unnecessary danger. Of course, they were also underlining how they have been in the past weeks helping, quote unquote, the local population to evacuate or relocate, or you know, what kind of, whatever word you want to use here. And so they are trying their best to sell this clear failure as a as something that is still kind of okay. So I think it's I will definitely be paying attention to this in the days to come as well, because different programs and different presenters, different propagandists have different attitudes to these things. So it'll also be interesting to compare a little bit.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. So we devoted some time to Russia in this introduction, which I think makes a lot of sense, since the whole today's episode is about Russia, but it's not about Russia, like Moscow and the elites, but about Russian exclave Kaliningrad. And maybe now it's a good moment, Aga, you can introduce all of us to the topic of this episode and to our guest, why it's so interesting and important to look at Kaliningrad today.
Absolutely. So yeah, I think this is an episode that I have been thinking about for quite some time. As our listeners might remember, earlier this year, Kaliningrad came onto the headlines because there was this issue with how Lithuania was enforcing EU sanctions, and that affected essentially some of the railway traffic in terms of transport of certain goods through Kaliningrad. And there was this moment of crisis because Russia obviously started portraying it as some kind of blockade of the whole Kaliningrad, as if, you know, some dramatic things were happening there. And this is something that we talk about in the interview as well. You have to be really careful when it comes to Kaliningrad, because it's such a sensitive point that whatever happens there, there's going to be so much propaganda around it. There's going to be so much exaggeration, especially from the Russian side. So whenever something happens there, we need to be very careful. We really need to always try and get to the bottom of what is actually happening. And so I think because it's such a place where these kinds of things might come up at any point, we thought that it would be good to introduce you listeners to Kaliningrad a bit more from historical perspective, from the perspective of what is the actual meaning of Kaliningrad today for Russia, what kind of role it plays, and also to talk a little bit more about the people who live there and whether they are somewhat different in terms of their opinions and their views compared to the people who live in, let's say, mainland Russia. So I sat down for this with Miłosz Kordes, who is a postdoc researcher at Lund University in Sweden. And he's also a fellow researcher at the Danish Foreign Policy Society and a lecturer at DIS Study Abroad in Copenhagen. And he has a PhD in cultural studies, and he's particularly interested in identity politics in the Baltic Sea region and in Central and Eastern Europe in general. And what is particularly interesting about his profile for this particular episode is that he was, until 2021, he was a career diplomat in the Polish Foreign Service, and he was actually working in Kaliningrad at the consulate, at the Polish consulate. So he does have an in-depth knowledge of the region, as you'll see. And I think some of the points that he's bringing up are really, really interesting. And so I think, yeah, I hope that you enjoyed this discussion and that it gives you a bit of a better understanding. And in case next time something happens in Kaliningrad, you will know what it is about and what to watch out for.
Yeah, as always, we think that having a little bit broader context of a country, of a region, of a situation is also always useful for understanding the ongoing events. That's the approach we are trying to have at Talk Eastern Europe. One recent news from Poland about Kaliningrad is that the Polish government decided to build up a fence on the border between Poland and the Kaliningrad, which is a similar thing we already have built in on the border with Belarus. And I don't think so it has any particular significance for your conversation with me or for the topic of today's episode. But here it is a fact. This is a kind of another development in this thing, which we can call the securitization of borders in the borderland between Poland or Eastern European Union flanks and Russia.
Definitely. So I think without further ado, we can move on to my interview with Miłosz Kordes. Hello, welcome back to Talk Eastern Europe. This is Aga speaking, and with me is our guest for this week, Miłosz Kordes. Miłosz, welcome to Talk Eastern Europe.
Thank you for having me here.
Well, thank you for joining us. I think today we're going to discuss a very interesting topic, which I think is one of those minor topics that we don't often mention, but then all of a sudden it might erupt into something much, much bigger, much more significant. And then all of a sudden everybody is interested and all the media is interested in what is happening in Kaliningrad. So just to have this background in advance in case something happens again, because we already had some events earlier this year, but we never know when something new is going to happen. I think it would be really useful to just talk a bit more about where Kaliningrad is, what is its meaning for Russia and for the region geopolitically as well, and what people there who live there think about the current situation, what are the relationships between them and then some of the neighboring countries. I think all of this would be quite useful to know, and you are very well placed to talk about this. So I'm really glad that you joined us for this discussion, and maybe without further ado, I'll just jump right into my first question. And I would like us to first put all of this into context a little bit, because our listeners might know more or less about Kaliningrad. So just so that we are all on the same page to begin with, could you talk briefly about where Kaliningrad actually is and what is like the particularity of its location and how it came to be part of Russia to begin with?
Well, I've been dealing with Kaliningrad Oblast for more than 10 years now, and I've always considered this to be a region that's a bit forgotten from the point of view of the EU or NATO and Russia relations. Something that's there, something that sometimes comes onto the surface, but most of the time it's just a bit sort of tucked away somewhere in the shadow of other events. But now I've noticed with the war in Ukraine, with Russia's invasion of Ukraine, that this topic is more and more present. And I'm, even though I'm not happy that there is war in Ukraine, I'm somehow relieved to notice that people have started noticing Kaliningrad Oblast a bit more, because it's a fascinating piece of land, a land that encompasses the history of Western civilization, of Russia, and it all intertwines in a very, very peculiar way. So it's a stripe of land, which is approximately 15,000 square kilometers big. I think it's the size of Delaware, the state of Delaware in the US. It's a very small piece of land, which is sandwiched between Lithuania in the north and the east, Poland in the south, and the Baltic Sea in the west, which means that this is not an exclave, it's a semi-exclave, because it has access or has connection to Russia via the Baltic Sea. And it's a region that used to be part of Prussia, so the Kingdom of Prussia, but also the province of East Prussia within the borders of unified Germany. And then in 1945, it got conquered by the Red Army, by the Soviet Union, and it was divided between two entities. So the northern part of it became Soviet, became part of the Russian Soviet Republic within the Soviet Union, whereas the southern part, and that was the bigger part, approximately two-thirds of the region, became Polish. Now, Poland is important in this regard because of Poland's history. This region, before the war, had a lot of connections with the Polish language, with the Polish culture, with the Polish political history. The capital city of the region, Königsberg, so today's Kaliningrad, was once one of the biggest printing places for books in the Polish language right after Krakow. There was, for instance, the Battle of Grunwald or Tannenberg in 1410 that plays a phenomenal role in the Polish history, or the whole conflict between Poland and the Teutonic Knights that took place in the late medieval times. But for Russia, this connection or any sort of relations between what is now Kaliningrad Oblast, or the northern part of East Prussia, and Russia, Grand Duchy of Moscow, or the Russian Empire, or the Soviet Union, wasn't that pronounced. So it was mostly a war trophy. And it was also the first province of pre-war Germany that the Red Army entered into. And that's something that cannot be forgotten or cannot be disregarded, mostly because it somewhat decided the fate of the region. When the Red Army entered East Russia, there was a lot of bad emotions accompanying all those soldiers and all those commanders, because they were all thinking about everything that happened in the Soviet Union when the German army invaded the Soviet Union. All the atrocities, all the victims, and practically everybody had someone in the family that either was killed by the German army or suffered from the German actions in the Soviet Union. So for them, that was just an opportunity to have the personal and collective vendetta. And this is why the region got completely destroyed. Approximately 80% of all buildings, of all infrastructure, was completely destroyed by the Red Army. So, and it was also encouraged by the Soviet propaganda. The Soviet army newspapers and other propaganda material was clearly encouraging this kind of behavior, because that was a way of having their revenge after, well, for instance, the total destruction of Minsk, the siege of Stalingrad, and so on and so forth. So that was this moment when all these bad emotions, they accumulated and they bursted in East Russia. And this is also why the siege of Königsberg, which lasted for more than 2 months, became a symbol, one of the symbols of the Soviet victory in the Second World War, or the Great Patriotic War, as the Russians like to call it. So the region was created in 1945, firstly as the Königsberg Oblast. The name wasn't changed, and it's also very emblematic that the first administrative structure that got created was a military structure. It wasn't a civilian structure. So everything that was going on in that region was under the Soviet military command, not the civilian one. And the name was changed into Kaliningrad only a year later, in 1946. And this is also when the Kaliningrad Oblast, as we know it today, was created by the Soviet Union.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much, Miłosz, for putting us into this context. I think it's already very important to know all this, and because this will have an impact probably on your answers to my following questions. And so my second question would be now about the current times. And so I was wondering what is the significance of Kaliningrad for Russia in terms of strategy, military aspects, but also the economic aspect, which, as I understand, is very, very important as well.
So I think that brings us back to the Soviet times again, but just briefly. So when the Kaliningrad Oblast was created in 1945, 1946, it was a region that was effectively cut off not only from the rest of the world, but also from the rest of the Soviet Union. You needed a special permit to enter the region. And even though it was inhabited by the Soviet citizens, even though it was also a regular part of the Soviet Union, it wasn't any sort of special district, it wasn't an autonomous district, it was just part of the Russian Federal Soviet Socialist Republic, you needed a special permit to enter it, because it had a very, very big military importance. That was the main base of the Soviet Baltic Sea Fleet, which is to this very day as the Russian Baltic Sea Fleet, located in the town of Baltiisk, which used to be, before the war, it used to be Pillau. By the way, the name Baltiisk itself was also considered as one of the names for Königsberg. But since the Mikhail Kalinin, who was one of the high-ranking Soviet officials at that time, died in the beginning of 1946, then the Soviet leadership decided to name the city after Mikhail Kalinin, hence Kaliningrad, not Baltiisk. So that's the military aspect in the Soviet times, and this sort of a seclusion of the region from the rest of the Soviet Union. And even though it changed already in the last months of the existence of the Soviet Union, when the port of Kaliningrad was opened in May of 1991, this military aspect, this geopolitical or geostrategic aspect of the region was still very significant. And we need to remember that in the 90s, when the whole Soviet bloc disintegrated, countries such as Poland, Lithuania, but also other countries in the region, they chose the Euro-Atlantic path of integration. So they very quickly established formal ties with European communities. Well, back then, the European Union didn't really exist still until the Maastricht Treaty, with NATO, and then joined NATO in 1999 and 2004, and then again in 2004, they joined the European Union. So for Russia, there was this westernmost part of the country that was somehow sandwiched between countries that very quickly started integration with the camp that was still considered to be hostile, or at least not very friendly in the Russian eyes. And as Vladimir Putin came to power and as Russia regained some strength and the economic crisis from the 90s was gone, then the role of Kaliningrad Oblast in terms of its military potential became even more pronounced. So to this very day, it's a region which, despite its rich history, its multicultural, multi-confessional and multi-ethnic pre-war heritage, is considered by Moscow, by the Kremlin, to be of military importance. And we saw it, for instance, 15 years ago, around 15 years ago, when the Russian army transported some ballistic missiles to Kaliningrad, also to put pressure on NATO, to put pressure on the US to withdraw from building ballistic missiles installations, for instance, in Poland. And an interesting thing about this whole exercise was that those ballistic missiles were transported on civilian ferries. So no military vessels were used to do it. We know that these ballistic missiles are still there, and they're supposed to pose a threat or be a reminder to countries in the region, mostly to the Baltic Sea countries, to Poland, to Lithuania, that Kaliningrad Oblast and Russia's presence is still there, and it's mostly predominantly a military one.
That is indeed a point of, I think, anxiety sometimes. So also, well, now increasingly the fact that there are these ballistic missiles there, and it's always, I think there has been more and more of these debates, like, you know, are they likely to be used? Is Kaliningrad really a dangerous spot that we should pay attention to? Because of course it's so close to Poland, so close to Lithuania. So if there was meant to be any attack from there, you know, it's as quick as it can get. So, well, I'm sure we will probably still talk a bit more about it later. But now I wanted to move from this, let's say, geopolitical, economic importance into the people of Kaliningrad, right? So, you know, from what you've already said in terms of historical background, it's not like these people have been there for centuries, right? And their families have been there for centuries. It's very much been a place that has changed its position or changed its belonging from one country to another. And the people who live there now, mostly they migrated after the war, as I understand. And most of them are ethnic Russians from what I see, but I'm guessing that this very particular geographical position might make them somewhat separate from what we would call maybe the mainland Russian population. And I was wondering what you could tell us about them as people. Are they somewhat different? Do they have their own particular identity? And if so, in which sense?
So indeed, in 1945, when the war ended, there were approximately 100, maybe 130,000 pre-war inhabitants that were still living in what is today's Kaliningrad Oblast. The rest fled. They either fled in 1944, before the Red Army approached East Russia, or they fled in a very disorganized, in a very dramatic way as the Red Army was approaching, was moving towards Königsberg and the Baltic Sea coast. And then those people, they were mostly Germans. And then they stayed over there mostly because the Soviet military command needed them. For instance, engineers, all those people that knew how to run different infrastructure, appliances or devices, some factories. The Soviets needed them to help the whole region get back on its feet. But at the same time, people from the rest of the Soviet Union started coming and started inhabiting the region. They came mostly from what we usually call the central districts or the central regions of today's Russia. So the regions of Bryansk, the regions of Kursk or Smolensk, they came over there mostly because their home regions were completely destroyed. So they were very often lured by people hired by the Soviet authorities to come because they were promised a piece of land, they were promised to way better living conditions, and no one told them about the scale of destruction in the former province of East Prussia. It was also destroyed, it was also badly destroyed, even worse than the regions that they came from. There was also a part of those newcomers, they came from Lithuania, for instance. And it's not a coincidence because the central and the eastern part of today's Kaliningrad Oblast played a very, very important role in the development of Lithuanian culture and Lithuanian language. In the 19th century, when it was prohibited to print books in Lithuanian in Latin alphabet in the Russian Empire, those books were being delivered from the territory of East Prussia by people who were essentially smugglers, and they just carried those books on their backs across the border illegally to leave them in Lithuania and help spread the Lithuanian books, the books in Lithuanian language in the Latin alphabet. And this part of Kaliningrad Oblast is called, by Lithuanians, it's called Mažoji Lietuva, so Lithuania Minor. And those people came over there because they also might have had some relatives, they might have had heard stories about it. And so they came mostly to the central and the eastern part of the region. But the majority of people were Russians, ethnic Russians. And they also, it's also important to remember that most of them, they were young people. So they were either born right before the revolution or after the revolution. So they didn't remember the Tsarist times in Russia. They only remembered the Soviet Union. To them, the Soviet Union was the only motherland. They were brought up in the Soviet ideology. They were convinced they were building a new Soviet region. And that was also the main motive of the Soviet propaganda, that now we are destroying this lair of the fascist beast and we're building a new, bright, shiny Soviet future, this exemplary region of the Soviet Union. But then they also started discovering all those traces of the pre-war history. For instance, the ruins of the Königsberg castle, where the amber chambers was believed to be. They saw some little red brick churches and other traces of how the region used to look like in the past. And they started somehow asking or confronting everything that they've been told about the region with what they saw in the region. And this is why this dialogue between the Soviet anti-German, anti-fascist ideology and this pre-war non-military aspect of the German of the East Russian past started having a dialogue, sort of a dialogue. And this all resulted in creation of this very pronounced sense of regional identity, which complements the sense of national identity. So those people would, most of the time, they would consider themselves to be Russians. They would speak the Russian language. They would be educated in the Russian system and in the Russian culture. But at the same time, they would feel that there's something different about the region. And that's the pre-war past, that's the legacy of East Prussia, of Germany maybe, even though this way of thinking about it is also based on the myths that the Germans created before the war. Because we need to remember that East Prussia used to be a multi-ethnic, multicultural, multi-confessional area, because it was populated by people coming from all around Europe. There were Germans, of course, but there were also Poles, there were Lithuanians, there were Czechs, there were Dutch people coming there. There were even some Orthodox people coming there because they were persecuted in Russia, so they had to seek shelter somewhere else, and they were invited by the Prussian king. So it was only when Germany unified under the auspices of the Kingdom of Prussia that this nationalistic narrative started being prevalent, when all those people were told to believe that they are Germans, that they the ethnic origin doesn't really matter because now they're Germans. And this myth that was created by the German Empire and was then somehow perpetuated by the Third Reich, by the Nazis, it, strangely enough, it survived the war, and it was taken by people that came to the region after the war, that the past, the pre-war past, was German. So to them, everything that they try to look at when it comes to the events before 1945 is something that was German, even though it wasn't in the first place. But it definitely played a role in this development of very pronounced regional identity in the region. This interest in the pre-war past was genuine, was intense, especially in the 90s, especially in the 2000s. And it actually started to change only in the last 10 years because of developments in Russia as a whole.
So speaking about these current developments in Russia as a whole and the developments that spill over to other countries, sadly, as well, what do we know about Kaliningrad inhabitants' attitude towards the current Russian invasion of Ukraine? Is there, again, is it somewhat different just because of their geographical position and this regional identity that you talk about, or is it relatively similar to what we could say an average attitude in Russia?
While I was doing my PhD research, and I wrote my PhD thesis about identity formation in the Kaliningrad Oblast after the disintegration of the Soviet Union, and I was doing some field work in Kaliningrad, and that was before I got posted to Kaliningrad as a Polish diplomat, as the vice consul, I would very often talk to people and try to understand this relation between the regional identity, or the sense of regional identity, and the sense of national identity. And they would talk a lot about the fascination about the pre-war past. They would really show me the sense of pride that they're different than Russians in the rest of the country. But at the same time, when it came to these borderline situations, when it came to talking about NATO, for instance, or this conflict between the West and Russia, they would usually opt for Russia and the official Russian narrative. So they would say, okay, we might be different, but we are still Russians. So we are citizens of the Russian state, and we are very proud of everything that's going on, for instance, after the annexation of Crimea, after the beginning of the war in Donbass. And well, I don't live in Kaliningrad anymore, so it's with the information blockade that we all suffer from, it's difficult to say for sure. But pretty much also now, after the invasion of Ukraine, many people felt proud, also because we need to remember that they, all their lives, they've been subject to this intense propaganda, this imperialist propaganda, that Russia is one thing, but there's also no such thing as, for instance, separate Belarusian and Ukrainian nation, something that has intensified in the last decade or so. So if you are subject to this very intense propaganda related to these very chauvinist, very imperialist notions, you at some point start to believe in them. If you didn't believe it then before all this propaganda thing started. So for them, everything that's going on in Ukraine is just a just war. It's a war that is justified by Russia being provoked by NATO countries. Well, even though we know it wasn't Russia defending its own sphere of interest. And also, it's also related to this belief that there is this big pan-Russian nation that consists of the three East Slavic nations, the Russians themselves, but also Belarusians and Ukrainians. That's something that, for instance, heard from President Putin a bit more than a year ago in his article in July 2021, when he tried to prove, using some quasi-historical arguments, that, well, there's no such thing as the Ukrainian nation. It's just part, it's just a branch of this bigger Russian nation, which Russians call Triediny Ruski Narod. So the Russian nation that consists of three branches or three parts. And I think that this is also something that resonates among the people of Kaliningrad.
All right. So now I think what I would like to do is, now that we've talked about sort of Kaliningrad specifically, I wanted to zoom out a little bit and see how all these aspects influence its relations with the countries that it borders. So as you mentioned at the very beginning, that's Lithuania in the north and in the east, and then Poland in the south. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about what the relations between Kaliningrad Oblast specifically and these two countries looked like before the full-scale invasion started on the 24th of February, the invasion of Ukraine. And how have these relations changed after the start of the invasion?
So in a way, I think that something that laid foundations for the sharp deterioration of relations between Russia and then consequently Kaliningrad Oblast and these two countries, Poland and Lithuania, was the COVID-19 pandemic. Because the borders between Kaliningrad Oblast and the two countries have essentially been closed since March 2020. It was very difficult for people from Kaliningrad to enter the European Union and the Schengen area, because the priority for European Union countries was to ensure that the intra-EU flow of people would be either unimpeded or only limited, but still possible. And that meant closing all the external borders of the European Union. And in this sense, Kaliningrad Oblast definitely suffered from it. Only a very small category of people, the persons were allowed to enter, such as sailors doing contracts on EU ships and so on and so forth. And in this sense, it was maybe easier for people in Kaliningrad to get used to the idea that it's not that easy to enter Poland or Lithuania. And before the pandemic, those relations had been very intense. Mostly because of the shopping appeal of Poland. There is this joke in Kaliningrad. Where do you go in Kaliningrad if you want to buy cheap products? And then the answer is to Poland. And I think to an extent it was true, especially when the local border traffic agreement was still in force and it was suspended in 2016. It was possible for Kaliningraders to have a special permit that didn't require a stamp in the passport. And that's very important, because if you travel a lot, and Kaliningrad is, they travel a lot, at least they used to travel a lot, they would run out of free space in the passports very quickly. So it was possible for them to go, for instance, to Gdansk or to some towns on the border and do their shopping, do the groceries very quickly. And they could buy very good quality products at a lower price than in Kaliningrad, and then go back to Kaliningrad and enjoy them. And that also stimulated some talks and some interactions between people that had been living on both sides of the border, but at the same time, they didn't get that much interaction. And then when the borders closed, it became very difficult again. And I think that what's been going on around Ukraine and around Russia's invasion of Ukraine, it's just a continuation of everything that's been going on since the outbreak of the pandemic. Another thing, I guess, is that Kaliningrad Oblast relies on the flow of goods from the so-called mainland Russia, and also from imports of goods. And in order to do that, the region needs to maintain railway transit routes via Lithuania, and also some ferry connections between St. Petersburg and Kaliningrad. Now, the problem with the latter has always been the deficiency of ferries. Just before the outbreak of the war, there were three or four ferries operating them regularly. And it was the governor of Kaliningrad Oblast, Anton Alihanov, that during the summer said that the region effectively needs around 20, 24 ferries to maintain unimpeded flow of goods between mainland Russia and the semi-exclave. And then another problem is all the sanctions that have been imposed on Russia by the European Union countries, which also influence the catalog of goods that can be transited via Lithuania by rail. And Lithuania at some point during the summer just suspended this transit. It wasn't actually the decision made by Lithuanians themselves, but it was just a way of putting all the restrictions imposed by the European Union in motion. And that created a lot of problems, mostly with the construction branch of Kaliningrad's economy. There were also reports of some other basic goods lacking in the shops. There is also a high inflation rate. And that's also something very typical for Kaliningrad, in the sense that if there is a crisis in Russia, in the whole of Russia, Kaliningrad gets hit by this crisis more than the rest of the country on average. And then consequently, if there are periods of growth, this growth will be higher in Kaliningrad, mostly because it's so close to the West, and if there are favorable circumstances or relations with the West, to trade with the West and to interact with the West, then people from Kaliningrad will show the spirit of entrepreneurship, and they will keep the local or the regional economy going. But it's not the case right now, unfortunately. They do suffer from all the restrictions, and they do suffer from the central policy, the Kremlin-based policy that doesn't really take into account the quality of life in Kaliningrad, because Kaliningrad, from the point of view of the Kremlin, is important only when it comes to military.
Yeah, and I think it's probably also worth mentioning when there was that we can call it a crisis, I suppose, earlier this year when Lithuania blocked part of these transits. It also showed how much space there is for propaganda and disinformation in relation to Kaliningrad, because Russia jumped straight onto it to say that basically Kaliningrad has been blocked or something, and like, you know, as if people cannot get out or people, you know, will not be able to get any goods or whatever. And that was obviously not true. But, you know, before anybody can like check and delve into details, people will already, you know, start creating whatever conspiracy theories or panic, etc. So I think this is something that needs to be borne in mind. Whenever something happens around Kaliningrad, it's probably best to read a bit more and try to really get down to the bottom of what it is actually that is happening, because otherwise we might fall victims to disinformation on this topic.
And actually, if you allow me just to add a very short thing to what you said, because it's very much relevant to the situation in Kaliningrad, that the Russian authorities and the Russian political culture is very much reliant on this notion of the besieged fortress, that Russia will always be surrounded by enemies and they will just wait to stab Russia in the back, to betray it, and to maybe take away some Russian territories. And I think that this notion of this conspiracy theory is even more visible in Kaliningrad, because of its geographical location, because of it being cut off from mainland Russia. It's a notion that comes back whenever there is anything wrong happening around Kaliningrad, even if it's the fault of the Russian authorities, of the authorities in Moscow. They would say, well, look at what's going on around us. It's again Poland, it's again Lithuania. They're trying to weaken us. They're trying to besiege us again, to encircle us and to do us harm. And that's something that is very much ingrained in the minds of people living in Kaliningrad Oblast, and has been there at least since late 40s, early 50s, because that was the moment when the Cold War was really looming on the horizon. And there was this moment in Kaliningrad Oblast when there were some newcomers already there. They were trying to build their lives over there. There were also was also a growing number of civilians. Most military personnel have already left. And then the Soviet newspapers started this paranoia of foreign spies operating in Kaliningrad. There were either the remaining few Germans, or there were some American spies allegedly operating in Kaliningrad Oblast. So that's something that has always accompanied this everyday life of people in Kaliningrad. There can always be some sort of external threat that will be internalized because of Kaliningrad Oblast location.
I think, yeah, that's really important to bear in mind. And I think this also is somewhat related to my last question, which is meant to wrap up our discussion. Taking all of this into account, everything we've said about geopolitics, about military importance, about the people and their attitude, about these strained relations with Poland and Lithuania, I was wondering, what would you say are kind of like the most sensitive elements right now of Kaliningrad's position, and what kind of crisis we might be facing soon, whether in relation, most likely probably in relation to the Russian invasion of Ukraine, but if there's any other sensitive point that you see, it would be interesting to hear where can we expect potential problems here?
Well, when it comes to the security dimension, I guess that an important point is that now that Sweden and Finland have decided to join NATO after following the policy of neutrality for many decades now, the Baltic Sea will essentially become a big NATO lake, with two exceptions. With the Russian coast around St. Petersburg and the Russian coast in Kaliningrad Oblast. And knowing the Russian logic and Russia's high potential to destruct, not to construct, also when it comes to international relations, both these regions, especially Kaliningrad, because it's located far south, very close to very sensitive parts of NATO's territory, like the Suwalki Gap, which separates Kaliningrad Oblast and Belarus, which is becoming more and more dependent on Russia, then I think that this position, this unique location of Kaliningrad Oblast, can be used to create some tensions and some ruptures around the Baltic Sea. And we know already that, for instance, units that were used to create, to construct, and also to control the Nord Stream pipelines when they were constructed, there were military units that were stationing, for instance, some ships, some little vessels, they were stationing in Baltiisk. And it's very likely that what happened with the Nord Stream pipelines, I mean, the damage that was inflicted on them a few weeks ago, it's something that didn't really require a lot of efforts on the side of the perpetrators. And if we assume for a second that's actually Russia that's to blame for it, it's very likely that all those explosives that might have been used to damage the pipelines, they had been put there while the pipelines were being constructed. And they might have been put there with the use of those units stationing in Kaliningrad. So that also shows this destructive potential of a very strong military presence of the Russian forces in Kaliningrad. And another thing, I guess, is that since Russia has been experiencing a lot of problems in Ukraine and it needed to deploy some troops stationing in other regions of Russia to Ukraine, it has also severed the situation of the military presence of Russians in Kaliningrad. So there's a very slow number of troops stationing now in Kaliningrad because of the need to deploy them in Ukraine. And this is also something that, if the situation continues to deteriorate for Russia, can be used by the Kremlin to create some sort of tension, maybe provocation. Well, it's something we've already seen in the history, and that's something that can be observed, and it shouldn't be ruled out.
Miłosz, thank you so much for all this. I think it's been an incredibly interesting conversation, and I've certainly learned a lot about Kaliningrad, even though I am Polish and I should probably know more about it already. But I think this has probably been very, very useful for all of our listeners, wherever they might be coming from. And I just wanted to ask you, in case our listeners want to find you or your research, your work, is there anything that you would like to plug? We can, of course, then put all sorts of links and references in the description of the episode. But is there anything that you would like to plug right now?
Well, first of all, I'm also very happy that we could talk about Kaliningrad today. So thank you again for inviting me to your podcast. It means a lot to me. And I think that over the last years, I've written quite a few pieces on Russian politics of memory and on Kaliningrad Oblast specifically. And you can have a look at my publications on my website, which is www.milosz, so my name, my first name, .dk. And there is a publication list over there if you click on one of the links over there. Maybe we can also, in the description of the podcast, we can also put, for instance, my LinkedIn profile. And I also try to publish some things about my activity over there. And, well, there's also the webpage of Lund University, where I do my postdoctoral research. And there should also be some publications and some news about my activity linked to that webpage.
Wonderful. We will definitely include all that in the description of the episode. And for now, I'll just say thank you again, and hopefully see you soon on Talk Eastern Europe.
Thank you very much. And yes, see you soon.
All right. That was Aga's interview with Miłosz Kordes, career diplomat and postdoc researcher at the University of Lund. That was quite a conversation, I think. I don't have anything else to add. If you, Aga, have, please go ahead. If not, I think it's a good moment to, as always, jump into our traditional announcement section. And as always, we have a couple of announcements we want to share with you. And the most important one, I think, is that we have a Patreon. So for those of you who likes listening to the podcast, you can consider becoming our patron, which really helps us to develop this project. And there is a bunch of different benefits for our patrons. And very recently, we started to produce more special content for our patrons. So, for instance, after each regular interview, we have some additional questions to our guest speakers, which are available only for our patrons. So please do consider that. But if you are not interested in that way of support, there still are very different ways how you can help us to reach out new public. And for instance, you can tell your friends about us. That's, I think, very traditional way, but also very effective and really helpful. Also, please give us a rating on the app you use to listen to the podcast and write us a review. If you want to be in touch with us, you can use our contact form on our website, www.talkeasternew.eu, or you can reach out to us at Facebook. We have two Facebook groups. One is a general one for everyone interested in the podcast, and the second one, I think, as you can already think about it, it's for patrons only. So there are different ways of being engaged with us. So we really appreciate that you can stay with us and you can support us. And there is also one more special benefit for our patrons, but this time I leave this one for Aga.
Thank you. It is always a pleasure to take care of this last key benefit that we have for our patrons, and that is our traditional patron shout out, in which we thank those of you who are with us and have supported us as patrons for a very, very long time. We are so, so grateful to you. We love interacting with you. We love getting your comments, your interactions on social media. It's absolutely brilliant. Thank you so, so much. And so I wanted to say today hello and thank you to Sean, David, Daniel, Carolina, Percy, RSJ, Michael, Anaïs, Tom, Olaf, CB, Klaus, Plamen, Sean, Naomi, JP, Elise, David, Urs, Ian, Sophia, Wilhelm, David, Erica, Janosz, Jason, Mark, Stephanie, and Pierre. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Anything else, Aga, we have for our listeners today?
No, I think that's it. I hope you enjoyed this episode. Thank you so much for listening, and talk to you soon.
Bye-bye.